This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Dave Barry just won't quit. The Pulitzer Prize winner did drop his syndicated column in the Miami Herald a year ago, but refuses to focus his life around the racetrack and the golf course like every other Floridian male of a certain age, and continues to work on movies and books. Perhaps with an eye toward eventual retirement, he's now published a book of economic advice, The Do-It-Yourself Financial Guide of the 21st Century. So if you have questions about starting your own business, teaching your kids about money, how to get rich on Wall Street, or about fundamental economic questions, where does money come from anyway? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address, the new one, talk@npr.org. Later in the program, what the State Department concluded about Niger's alleged sale of uranium to Iraq, and the classic romantic quadrangle of Chris, Susie, Gary, and Ziggy the Parrot. But first, Dave Barry joins us here in Studio 3A. He's the author most recently of Dave Barry's Money Secrets, like Why Is There a Giant Eyeball on the Dollar Bill? Nice to have you here in person, Dave.
Thanks to be here.
So why is there a giant eyeball on the dollar bill?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because I do address it in the book. I currently think it's national security. I think there's an actual camera in there. There's a little chip inside the in the dollar bill,
mm-hmm.
and it can see you. It is sending images back to a computer, probably somewhere here in the Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. area. So right now, it's probably picking up a lot of the insides of people's wallets.
You'd think so.
Yeah. But it could catch an act of terrorism, potentially. Or if you see one, you could just hold your dollar up
and
eyeball side out. And your government thanks you.
Well, this whole idea of money, I mean, you know, originally, as you point out in the book, people, you know, evaluated the price of things in cows.
They used cows for money for a long, long time, which was fine as well as it went. It made it very difficult to rob people, for example, because how far are you going to get with a cow?
Mm-hmm.
But it, also the issue of change was a big problem because you have to use smaller animals like your squirrels, your hamsters, which they tend to scamper off. You're always losing your money. So then they tried a whole lot of different things, and for a while they went with gold. Now we use, because we're smart, sophisticated people, pieces of paper. Which is,
boy, that'll fool them.
As long as we all really believe in them, they're really valuable.
Yes.
Because if you were to give somebody like an exchange for his house, acorns, everybody would say, you idiot, you took acorns. But now you get pieces of paper with an eyeball on them. So everybody believes in that. That's how our money system.
Mm-hmm.
People think we're kidding at this point, but we're actually not.
This is all true.
It's better that we just don't let that get around, because there will be a panic.
I've read somewhere that there's a phrase that appears throughout this book. I'm not making this
up.
I'm
not. For a while, a lot of people believe, I think still believe, that their currency is backed by gold. And I just want to say, if you go to Fort Knox and ask, and with your dollars, and ask, mm-hmm. for your gold, I'm sure they'll welcome you with open. Now you'll be used as a chew toy by federal dogs if you do that. So please don't try to get any gold for your money. It's just pieces of paper, folks. But we all believe in it.
We all have to learn about the value of money, the value of that dollar, and of course the eyeball. As children, and you wrote that as a child, your family wasn't all that rich.
No, we weren't.
And you grew up, you know, the way you made extra money was mowing lawns.
Mowing the lawn. Not so much mowing the lawn, but we did have a lawnmower, and this is how I learned the value of a dollar. It was a really old, crummy lawnmower. And when spring would come and the lawn would start to grow, I would go out and yank on the starter motor,
mm-hmm.
50, 70, 1,000 times, who knows how many times, but it wouldn't start. And then I would go in and whine to my parents for money, and they would give it to me. It was hard work, but I did it, because that's the way it was in those days. Now, kids today, they want everything just handed to them, and that's why I think it's so important to stress financial discipline to them, to tell them, to sit them down and say, listen, just because your friends have food, clothing, shelter, and medical care, that doesn't mean you get to have those things. Teach them. That's what I'm saying. Be a grown-up.
There's the eternal question of how much allowance should kids have.
Very, very complicated, difficult, a lot of variables. $3.
$3.
It's plenty. Plenty. And they should put $1 aside every week to teach them that they'll have money saved up, and also that's useful for you in case you run out of money. You can just borrow theirs.
In case you need beer.
Yeah. So they should keep it. Yeah. Keep it. They should keep it somewhere. Well, not for them, the beer. That would be your beer, honey.
Well, yeah. that's another book about that I'm sure you're going to be writing later about culture and that sort of thing. Yeah. But anyway, 800-989-8255 if you have economic questions for Dave Barry. His new book is Dave Barry's Money Secrets. Or you can send us email talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Larry. Larry's calling us from Cleveland in Ohio.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Fine, Larry. How are you?
Good. I just want to say, first off, I've been a big fan of yours for many years, and I've actually taken financial advice from you already.
That's pretty scary, Larry. If this is about a lawsuit, Larry, this is not the number.
No, no. No, I bought your book on home ownership.
Oh, and, okay.
I went with a book of checks and was told by your book that anyone could walk in and ask me for a check, and I had to write it, fill it out, and give it
to
you.
Yeah, I described the ritual home ownership closing ceremony where they start with reasonable sounding documents. You know, this is the title search. This is the insurance. But then they slowly work down. This is your share of the Spanish-American War debt. This is the digestive system of a badger. And you have to sign these things or you don't get your house. It's that simple. And then word gets around the legal community. Hey, there's a signing going on. He will sign it. He'll write a check for anything in there. You know? And eventually you basically just open the window and throw money out is what you do.
And that turned out to be entirely true.
That's exactly how it works.
Just based on what I heard at the first part of the interview before I turned off the radio was I guess I should not start saving my acorns and walnuts for my future retirement.
Actually, I think they're probably you're better off with that than your Social Security at this point. Yeah. Isn't that how Social Security is paid? So many acorns per month? Now, as I understand, we have a Social Security crisis coming up, which is, as I understand it, people my age, I myself am 58. Mm-hmm. I'm a baby boomer person. We're going to get all our money, but the people, my kids, are not going to get their money. So what's the problem?
Yeah.
Does anybody see
any difficulty? their worldview, you write, is completely screwed up because they think this is all about them.
Exactly. It's not about you. It's about us, the baby boomer.
No, I'm going to get off the line. I just wanted to say I have been a big fan for years, and I will continue to follow your financial advice for as long as you're writing it.
Larry, that's good, and if you do end up in a refrigerator carton, God bless you.
Yeah, next time you're in a halfway house, give us a call.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Larry. Let's talk to Bill, and Bill's calling from where? Fort Gibson in Oklahoma.
Yes, sir.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
We hear you, Bill.
Thanks for taking my call, being as we have a genius on board to answer money questions. The Republicans and the leadership in Washington, D.C. believes that removing the mortgage interest rates for homeowners or cutting it way down is a way to raise taxes and so on and so forth. And there's a lot of people that are relying on that and pretty well have bought their homes and so on and so forth. And so what I was wondering is, what is your thought on splitting a payment and making half of it mortgage interest deduction and the other half reducing the principal instead of it being, when you first buy a house, the majority of it is an interest write-off. So just automatically half the payment's interest and the other half is principal reduction, which increases the equity in a home faster for people. That would help America. If they're not going to grandfather everybody in that's bought homes heretofore, what would be wrong with that? And I'll take your answer off the air.
Okay.
Well, thanks for the call, Bill. And I think principal reduction, wasn't that the subject of your other book on schools and diets?
That's right. Yeah. I have to say I completely agree with everything the caller said that I understood, which was that he was in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I'm kind of, it's a little hazy to me, but I really think that anything he thinks, I think, especially if there's a chance he's armed.
There is also along the way with financial advice there's important professional advice. Do you remember your three important tips on how to operate a computer, which of course is going to be the future for everybody?
Sooner or later. I think the three steps are you turn it on, and that's step one. Step two, you wait for it to boot up. And step three, you call technical support.
And that will take the rest of your life.
Speaking of technical support, I have a proposal in my book for businesses where people can start. And one of them is tech support for baby boomers, which I really think somebody could get rich doing. And basically, the problem is this. There are a lot of people my age. We're baby boomers. We buy technical things. We think we're technically sophisticated. So we buy gadgets. But then we don't actually know how to work them.
No.
A good example, like MP3 things, you know that there's supposed to be music coming out, but you don't really know how that, at least I don't, how it gets in there, how it gets out. Or you buy a digital camera, which we all have one of, and you take lots and lots of pictures, and you know they're in there somewhere, but you don't know how to get them out of the camera. So you tend to show your pictures, at least I do, to other people
right away
on the back of the camera, which is pretty. So you know, and you can't see because you don't. The other thing about us is our eyes aren't that great. So you'll say like, this is either the Eiffel Tower or a bar mitzvah, you know, and so. What I thought, and then typically what you do when you have a problem is you call technical support, but it's always somebody who's 23 years old. Usually it's also somebody in like Malaysia, but the key problem is that they're young and they think that you understand them and you don't. So my idea would be you would call technical support and you would get, if you pushed a special boomer number and you'd get somebody just as old as you are.
Uh-huh.
And you'd say your problem, which is I can't get the pictures out of my camera. And the person would go, ha, I can't do that either. And you wouldn't solve your problem, but you'd feel so much better than you do now, which is waiting, talking, and then still not being able to do it.
The other business that you proposed is where the heck are my glasses?
Finding your – yeah, you would call a toll-free number, and they would tell you where your reading glasses were.
How would they know?
Well, they wouldn't have to tell you because you would never remember the number. It would just be a – you know, you would get them to subscribe, but they would never, you know.
And you'd step on something sharp.
And you're walking to get to the phone, you'd probably step on. At least that's what I do. My floor, people say, what's your floor made of, Dave, at your house? I say, it's reading glasses for the most part.
Here's an email question. This from Stephen in Phoenix, Arizona. Please explain in simple language, what is the Federal Reserve and what does it do? If that's too hard, please explain how to get out of paying alimony.
Okay. The Federal Reserve is a big reserve that we have here in Washington. It's here.
Antelope and buffalo there.
And, well, it's run by a man, or was. I think he's a retired man named Alan Greenspan. And what happens is when we get concerned about the economy, they call Alan out. And if he sees his shadow, then he raises the interest rates. Or it's along those lines anyway. And that's what the Federal Reserve does. And it keeps the economy on an even keel. What was the other one? Alimony?
How to get out of paying alimony.
Oh, okay. Well, I would recommend the same technique that I use
to get out of paying for the IRS.
For the income tax, which is a very – it's a little tip, and I don't know why nobody thinks it, where it says name, write your name, and then write deceased right after your name. Now, that also has to change the way you answer your phone, of course, which would be like in your case, you'd say, this is Neil, unless it's the IRS, in which case this is not Neil.
The other one was to set up a summer home in Uzbekistan.
Yeah, because how are they going to check that?
Yeah, there you go. After a short break, more financial advice from Dave Barry. Call with your questions, 800-989-8255. The address for email questions, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today with Dave Barry, Pulitzer Prize-winning humorist and now financial advisor. Dave Barry's Money Secrets has just been published, like Why Is There a Giant Eyeball on the Dollar? Believe me, that's on the cover. And we've also now understood the reason why Dave Barry chose to write this book, of course, his enormous financial acumen and the chance of getting a picture of himself in a wig.
Yeah, there's a picture of me dressed as George Washington, and I don't want to. Do I look like that, Neil?
No.
Okay, good.
You look like a guy who likes wearing wigs, though.
A little too much, you think?
I don't know. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Ray. Ray's calling from Kansas City.
Yes, I have a question regarding IRAs. I worked for an organization in which I set up an IRA into two individual accounts, and I learned that my employer transferred one of my accounts to the other accounts without my knowledge. And I'm wondering if I discover discrepancies on that, how do I address debating any discrepancies?
Okay, first of all, you don't want to go into his office with a machete, okay? Because that's completely a violation of the code of ethics. You want to? You're talking about an IRA now?
Yes, but it's an ex-employer.
It's an ex-employer. In that case, I think the machete is
I'm sorry. I take that back about the machete. Get the machete, and just don't use it because that's really wrong. But just sort of have it in your hands when you discuss this with him.
It's sometimes effective. You just hone it.
Maybe split, like hold a piece of paper up and go, whoosh, and
that's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Ray, thanks very much for the call.
But I mean, there's agencies where you're supposed to report this. How do I do that?
Okay. Well, then I would just call an agency right now and report it.
The Ford agency is probably a good idea. Anyway, thank you for the call, Ray.
I think we really helped Ray quite a bit.
I think we really helped Ray quite a bit. Yeah. And somebody may want to look into his next step.
I just hope Ray really doesn't have a machete, or if he does, that he doesn't know where I live. But anyway.
Another email question. This is from Scott in Bowling Green, Ohio. What is a pig future, and should I invest in them or it?
Okay, pig futures. I actually cover the options market a little bit. If you suspect that there's going to be a rise in the price of pigs, or as they're known on Wall Street, porks, you want to go long on, or is it short? I can never remember.
It's one or the other.
You want to go long or short on porks. But what you do is you go and you put in a bid for like a certain number of pork bellies. Let's say in your case, what was his name again?
I just threw this over here. This was Scott.
Oh, Scott would say Scott, and I'm familiar with Scott's situation, would want to go in for like 5,000 to 10,000 pork bellies. Okay, so you put in and you put in a bid for them. Now, here's the really important thing, Scott. Write that information down. Because you want to sell them before they come due. Because the last thing you really want, trust me when I tell you this, is a pork belly. Okay?
Much less 5,000.
You don't want, exactly. You don't want to, like, one morning look out and there's the UPS man with a refrigerator truck saying, Scott, here's your pork. And, you know, you want to pawn them off on somebody else. Okay? Somebody, Scott, even less sophisticated than yourself.
Somebody who really likes bacon.
Right. Or just is stupid. And then that's the way it works. And then everybody trades the pork belly options until finally some pathetic loser actually ends up with pork bellies, which are really useful only as a prank. So that's basically my feeling on the whole option situation.
Let's talk now with Charles. Charles in Chesterfield, Missouri.
Howdy. Dave, I've always been trying to find out who prints the money and what basis do they print it on. Is it because they did something like run out of acorns or because they want more acorns?
Well, I think you actually could trade the money in for something useful, gold, I think. But then I believe it was President Richard Nixon who decided that it was just kind of gold was actually valuable. Right. So why, if you have the gold, would you give it up for a piece of paper? I think that was kind of how the government felt about that. And so they just sort of said, we'll keep the gold and you get to keep these pieces of paper.
Richard Nixon, so warmly remembered by so many of his countrymen.
Yeah. So that's really how it happened, Scott. So, but at some point, we all just sort of bought into the idea that the paper is really valuable. I certainly think it is.
And I guess Charles
thinks
pretty
sophisticated guy.
He didn't want to spend more of it hanging on the phone like
gone.
That.
He's gone.
He's like, let's go to Jennifer. Jennifer's calling from Tallahassee.
Hi, Dave.
Hello, Jennifer.
I have a question. I'm thinking about buying a home for the first time, and I want to know what these point things are. What are points? Explain them to me.
Points are a certain amount of – points is a code word for money. Okay, when they say you're going to have to pay them points, that means you're going to have to give them money. But they're just like, you're not going to come right out and tell you that. But
you get anything tangible out of it? I mean,
no. You just give them money and you get a house. Does that mean? But houses are not as tangible as people think they are. And I hope you're not going to make one of the two big mistakes that many home buyers make.
And what would those be, Dave?
Number one would be buying an old house.
Mm-hmm.
Number two would be buying a new house. These are the two. Because old and new houses, turns out, are both made of wood. And where does wood come from? A lot of people don't know this.
Trees?
Trees. And what are trees? Giant buffets for insects. So basically, you have a thing that insects eat in the wild. It's like building your house out of pork. And to go back to it's an edible substance.
Build a bunker, you think?
I think, or just basically, probably your best bet is to buy a good quality humor book about money in your situation.
Okay.
That's what I would advise.
All right.
Jennifer, good luck.
All right, thanks.
Boy, we are helping people today, aren't we?
Right and left.
Yeah.
Kate in Jacksonville writes, I'm a boomer who's retired early, and I find myself spending way too much time reading retirement books. They all tell me I don't have enough money to pay for the rest of my life. Should I stop reading these books? I'd hate to add psychiatry bills to what I already can't afford.
Well, I actually have a chapter in my book called Retirement, the Financial Advantages of an Early Death. But in assuming you don't want to go that route, yeah, I would stop buying the retirement books, and maybe you could even think about getting a part-time job, like for example, Neil here in the radio station.
Yeah, that's
this isn't a full-time thing.
No. What else do I do with the other?
I don't know.
This is 2 hours a day.
Exactly.
let's talk with John. John's calling us from South Bend in Indiana.
Yeah. Hi, Dave. How you doing?
I'm well, John. And you?
Good. Hey, listen, I live close to Chicago. And with the difference between bulls and bears, I was kind of confused. So I ended up betting half of my income on both and ended up losing. Can you tell me where I went wrong?
I think living that close to Chicago was probably your big mistake.
Thanks
for calling.
Bye.
Goodbye, John. Bulls and bears, of course.
Yeah, it's like kind of long. That's like the long and the short thing.
Yeah,
like
it's so complicated.
It is really hard. I don't know how people remember. I think a lot of people lose a lot of money just because of that. Which is bull. Now, bull is like, okay, remember that Merrill Lynch used to do the...
Strong like bull.
So that's how I remembered. But I always thought it was kind of weird that a company that wanted you to give them a lot of your money advertised itself by this giant dumb animal that goes around pooping all over the world. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying.
It sort of puts you on the horns of a dilemma now, doesn't it?
It behooves us to move along, I think.
Well, that's the udder part of the story.
wait a minute. Bulls do not have udders. Come on. Do they?
Well, you learn something new on this program every single day. Let's talk with Mary. Mary's calling from Naples in Florida. Getting a lot of your Floridians calling.
Yeah. They have nothing to do.
Hi, Dave. Hey, how are you?
Fine, Mary. And yourself?
I'm fine. I was so glad to hear that you and I have so much in common. We're both 58 years old and we're both people.
We're both carbon-based life forms, Mary.
Right.
And I feel that bond between us.
I have a really, really important question that I need to ask you. Here in Naples, we're always getting these invitations to go to dinners, wealth management seminars, and things like that. And I was wondering, how many of those dinners do you think a person ought to go to every month?
As many as humanly possible. I mean, the idea would be to consume their food without letting them actually have your wealth. If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless it's one of those things where they don't let you out the door, they don't let you go to the bathroom until you invest.
Uh-huh.
Then you don't want that.
But, you know, would that be worth the trade-off, getting the free meals? You know, I mean, not being able to go to the bathroom and everything.
Kind of depends what they're serving for dinner, doesn't
it? I think you're smart. Your top-line investors, you're really shrewd Wall Street operators, go to the bathroom before they go into the...
Yeah, I think they would.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Mary, before we let you go, Naples, Florida, when do they serve these dinners? About 3:30 in the afternoon?
they serve them early, because, you know, most of us here are pretty old. Like,
58.
Dave and I are pretty old.
Yep.
They've got to clear out the investment crowd to get the early birders
I've been to Naples. Naples has like 6 golf courses for every human.
Yeah.
What does everybody do there? Everybody just kind of...
Well, they wear funny pants and white shoes and things like that. You know, it's the style.
So you're like one of the young,
white
cool,
belt capital of America.
You're one of the hep people there, I would think. Young babe of 58.
Oh yeah,
You're like a rock and roll animal in Naples,
right.
I would think.
Yes, we're really the youth of Naples. That's one of the reasons that people in their 50s live here, so that they can feel really young.
Yeah, come to Miami, you'll feel really old.
Yeah, and we're also really dead.
No, we have a new attitude in Miami, a new tourism promotion slogan. Come back to Miami. We weren't shooting at you.
Thank you so much for your wonderful answer.
No, you're welcome. As I say, Neil and I are here to help. We're here to help
right.
people.
Thank you.
Arguments about money are always cited in divorce proceedings, that sort of thing. What advice do you have for couples who are maybe in some difficulty about how to resolve their situations?
Married couples?
Yeah.
The best way is to never get married in the first place, because that's really where the first big argument happens when planning the wedding, okay? Because the wedding planning usually doesn't involve the groom that much.
No.
It involves the bride and her mom. And the groom may not even be aware that there is a wedding coming up until he's informed, you know, maybe he gets an invitation or whatever. But the bride and the mom get in, you know, the wedding industry is enormous in this country. You know, a wedding kind of like along the lines of the Normandy invasion these days, only more expensive. And So the groom at some point begins to realize that they're going to spend like $50,000 or $100,000 on this wedding, which to him is basically a party. You know, and he says, why are we spending all that money on this wedding? Why don't we just invest
get a couple
it?
Of kegs? Or
But he says invest it because he's trying to be rational.
In fact,
if he had the money, he would buy a motorcycle. But anyway, that's when the couple starts arguing. It keeps on right all the way through because of the differing priorities. And I don't want to engage, far be it from me to engage, you know, indulge in gender stereotypes. Mm-hmm. But women will buy like to what appears to the man to be a really ridiculous quantity of shoes. And the man will buy, and this is, I'm basing this on my own relationship with the man, and I feel a need to buy a new laptop computer approximately every 20 minutes because of the qualities they have.
Yeah, absolutely.
In my case, it's irrational. And so my wife and I tend to like sneer at each other's economic priorities. Like, I don't know how many pairs of sort of roughly the same color of green shoes a human being needs, but I don't think there is a limit as far as my wife's concerned. So it's a constant problem, and there's really no solution to it except for to never get married.
Never get married
in
the
first
place.
Yeah.
Right. Email question from Derek. What are some useful acronyms that I may need to know when dealing with financial analysts?
Well, there's IOU. No, you don't really. They'll take care of the acronyms. If you go to a shrewd financial, he'll. I went to a guy. His name is Neil. He's a very nice man, and he produced this unbelievable report of charts and graphs, and I didn't understand any of it, and so I felt really kind of compelled to give him my money.
And so as long as you don't understand
any of it, then you know they must know what they're talking about.
But
it's like the space program.
It would never occur to you to say, you know, what does IRA stand for?
Right. I to this day, when they say that, I still think they're talking about a terrorist group. But I know they're not. I know they're not. And I'm sure nobody's investing in it. And maybe they are. I don't know.
For some reason, I just think they're spelling out the name of the Friday host. We're talking with Dave Barry about his new book, modestly titled Dave Barry's Money Secrets. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255 or send us an email, talk@npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Craig. Craig's with us from Athens in Ohio.
Yes.
Hi.
Hey, I got a question for Dave. So I was in a wonderful long-term, long-distance relationship with a woman. I live in Athens, Ohio. She lived in Albuquerque.
Excellent. And what did you do to screw that up?
Well, no. Well, here's the dealio. You know, I decided that it was best to get married.
So you decided that?
Well,
by yourself?
We decided we should get married.
She decided that you should get married?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
So, and it was, she lived 1,600 miles away. It was very expensive to continue the relationship at a great distance, and we loved and love each other very much. I was just wondering, when is it best, or when do you know that it is best to go ahead and buy the cow, even though you're still getting the milk for
it? Oh, the old buy the,
well...
Ha, don't you think that's kind of a sexist way to talk about a woman in Albuquerque?
Well, I told her to listen to the show, you know.
So have an interesting time.
Neil really is not qualified to speak on this because just a little while ago he expressed the point of view that bulls have udders. So I'll take the cow question. I think it's too late for you because you've already clearly agreed to get married.
But I own the cow.
You are, yeah.
And I assume you're still in Akron, Craig, and in Athens, and yeah. She's still in Albuquerque. So I assume, what, are you going to live in Norman, Oklahoma? It's about halfway between.
No. We have gotten married. She lives here now. I'm not necessarily.
So, like, let me get this straight. Your wife is listening in, and you're calling in and telling a large listening audience that you're not so sure it was a good idea.
No.
I don't think you have to worry about your marriage too much longer if you want to.
And indeed, that free milk was being delivered.
So you're saying soon I will have no milk and no cow?
Are you saying you were having sex with a cow, sir? Because that kind of thing may go in Athens, Ohio, but here.
Well, there are no cows in Albuquerque, as everyone knows.
No.
Not anymore. Anyway, Craig, thanks very much for the call. And I've rarely had to say this to somebody so much in need of it. Good luck.
Thanks, bud.
Another email question. This is from Donna in Cincinnati. Unfortunately, she says, hey, Dave, how about the imaginary money referred to as available credit? That's not even pieces of paper. How weird that credit cards rule when it's nothing but air.
I know. I have actually I don't know if I can find it in my book, but I discussed
it. Found those reading glasses, though.
I did. I keep those right under my – I was trying to explain how credit cards work. And the thing is, if you charge like a Diet Coke for $1
mm-hmm. –
First of all,
can you get Diet Cokes for $1 now?
First of all, I can't stand you because I'm behind you in line. I don't just pay $1, okay? But you know how people do now? They pay credit cards for everything. Do you have any idea how much that dollar is going to actually cost you when it goes on your credit card?
Absolutely not.
$343.67. And you know how I know that?
How do you know?
I made it up. And I think that's what they do too. Because we're not capable. We know it's like 18.5% or whatever, but we're not capable, most of us, after like, you know, we get out of, say, 12th grade, and that's the last time we ever deal with math. And so 18%, I mean, I know, I don't mean to insult the audience. I know there are people out there who could figure out what 18%
compounds. People could do it off the top of their head.
But I am not one of those people, and you're not, most of us with credit cards, we don't know what that is like, any more than we know what the cosine is, really. So when the credit card statement comes, we just pay, we just believe them, whatever. And I think they have like some kind of a contest at the credit card companies where like they have an award ceremony once a year. And they say like, you know, we got Mrs. Shirley Heppelmeyer to accept the bill that said she owes us $1 jillion with a J. You know, and there's a big loud round of applause. I think it's like that's how it works. I think that's how credit cards.
And of course, you can calculate all of those things on your PDA or your laptop computer
if you know how to make it work. And you have to call technical support.
Thereby lies the rub.
Yep.
More questions for Dave Barry. Who knew that all of these money secrets would be revealed on this program today? And stuff we're making up, as Dave Barry just said, into a dead microphone. We'll be back after a short break. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. He's Dave Barry. I'm Neil Conan. We'll continue after the break. This is NPR News. Today we're talking with Dave Barry about his new book, Dave Barry's Money Secrets, like Why Is There a Giant Eyeball on the Dollar? You're invited to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org, and let's go with Scott. Scott calling from Ann Arbor in Michigan.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Scott.
I have a next-door neighbor who is converting an old Ford Mustang with an engine that he says is capable of going forever without any gasoline. It's some kind of a perpetual motion machine. And he's asked me if I'd like to invest in this. And it sounds like a great idea. And I was wondering what you think about that, if I should invest in this.
Does this man, do you think, have any specific technical expertise that would make you think that he really has invented a perpetual? Because I'm not saying he hasn't. I'm just saying this would be new, as I understand it. This would be like, especially with a Mustang. You know, when you think of perpetual Mustang motion machines, you
Mustangs are not
Mustang.
Jaguars, but, Mustangs, but, perpetual motion. No.
But I know for a fact that there was a time machine made with a DeLorean because I've seen that on television.
Yeah, Mr. Fusion.
That's right.
That, yeah.
So I mean, did he give you any hints about how it works? And I don't want you to give anything away here.
Oh, he showed me all the drawings, but he told me I wasn't allowed to tell anybody. So.
Does he aware any time that you've noticed a hat made out of aluminum foil?
No.
Okay. Then it sounds to me like he's on the up and up. And I would put
sell the mortgage.
A Mustang, you say. You know,
a Kia would never go, but the Mustang, that's the killer. That's the killer app there.
Well, make sure you get, look, can I just say one thing? Make sure you get the extended service plan if it's really going to be going that long.
Scott, thanks.
Okay, I'll do that.
Thanks all very much for the call. We wish your friend the best of luck with his device.
A perpetual Mustang.
Flip writes us from Fort Myers in Florida. In spite of listening to NPR for decades, I'm still confused about the difference between the gross national product and the gross domestic product. It could be due to the fact that I've been in Florida too long and only have foggy memories of sidewalks.
Okay, the gross national product is the sum total of all the product produced gross in a gross way by the nation. Whereas the gross domestic product, as its name would imply, is the amount of the product that is produced by domestics.
It's the amount you take out to the sidewalk
exactly.
every morning.
And so you have to subtract the one from the other, and that gives you your differential. And it's a very useful indicator of the way things are going, as a rule. Not always.
Not always.
I would go short on that, or long.
David is with us in San Francisco. David, you're on the air.
My credit rating is dead due to some bad financial decisions made after college, but now I've got a little bit of savings, and I'm wondering how I resurrect it.
Well, and you don't want to go with the old witness protection program route.
Probably not.
Okay. Can you just describe to us the nature of the bad decisions made after college? Because I made quite a few myself. I
wanted
somebody even remembers.
Degree at my Visa card.
You did what?
I put a $40,000 master's degree on my Visa card.
Do you know you can get a master's on the internet for $250, young man? You got taken.
I would definitely do that next time.
All right. No, you want to resurrect your credit. Well, I think the thing to do, and let's not bring up the machete again. I think that it's kind of overused as a device. What you need to do is just buy something and pay for it right away. Something like, not a master's degree, but something like a PhD, maybe.
They're cheaper.
Yeah, they're much cheaper. And just
does
pay.
Does that improve my credit rating?
I think vastly
buying,
so.
Like,
then you've got
Visa card and paying them off.
Yeah, I think.
I've heard I should like buy a car or something. And then.
Oh, hey, if you're interested in a car, there's a perpetual motion Mustang in Ann Arbor.
Yep.
And I can't, frankly, for a young man like you with credit problems, I cannot think of a better vehicle, to be honest.
Yeah, no gasoline.
Exactly.
There you go. Thanks for the call, David. Good luck.
By the way, Dave.
Yes, sir.
You're a genius.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
He mentioned the $40,000 master's
degree. For a master's degree, man. Can I just talk about college a little bit?
That's just what I was going to ask you about.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't let you segue into that in your smooth NPR way. Go ahead.
Well, you know that word, segue. Go ahead.
Well, it's true. And this young man's question leads us perfectly into this. A lot of parents worry about college, paying for college for their kids. Good college can run you $30,000 or $40,000 a year for a good college, which is why I think it's so important to start planning now to get your child into a bad college.
That's not easy.
Way cheaper. Way cheaper.
But not easy.
No, it's not. And the key is bad grades. But they do not just happen by themselves. If you leave a child alone, that child is perfectly capable of going out and getting good grades. And then where are you?
And it might invent a perpetual motion Mustang.
So you have to stay right on your child. You say, no, you will not do your homework until you have finished your video games, young man. That's the kind of parenting we're looking for.
Intervention might be necessary in some cases.
Yep.
To tie them to that Xbox.
Right. Look for signs of is your child mysteriously missing coincidentally during school hours?
Ha! Big tip.
Your child is sneaking off to school, ladies and gentlemen. Be alert. Get wise, parents.
Let's go along and ask another listener to join us. This is Victoria. Victoria in Tallahassee, Florida.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing right. Well, and you?
Pretty good. Okay, I was wondering what your thoughts were on whether I should get a house and have a large down payment, but pay it off in a shorter period of time,
mm-hmm.
have a small down payment and a longer period to pay it off with. And also, I was wondering what your theory was on the spider on the dollar bill.
The spider on the dollar bill?
Yeah, that's kind of separate.
There's a spider on the dollar bill?
Now I'm getting creeped out. The eye was all right, but, you know.
I would use the, there's really a spider on the dollar bill. Hello?
I've heard there is somewhere around in all the spider web. Somewhere there's supposed to be a spider sitting in there.
Neil's going to check his dollar. Well, I answer your
house
question.
I work for public radio.
Let me ask you this.
Two of them.
Do you have a large amount of money to put down on the house?
Not really.
Okay, then I would go with the small amount of money route.
Okay.
That's my advice, because otherwise you'll have to, like, rob a convenience store or something like that.
Yes.
And really, that is, well, I mean, to be honest, that could hurt your credit rating long term.
I'm looking at the dollar bill, Victoria, and the only spider I see is George Washington.
Oh. I think it's supposed to be in the upper right corner.
No, there's a big one up there.
Neil's got a cow on his.
But it's giving milk for free. Victoria, thanks very much for the call. Good luck.
Good luck with the house.
Thank you.
Dave Barry, thank you for being with us.
It's my pleasure. I really think we helped a lot of people.
I think we did.
And
I think
that's
we
why we're here, isn't
problems.
It?
It's our mission.
It's what we do.
Dave Barry's Money Secrets is his new book. The subtitle, like, Why Is There a Giant Eyeball on the Dollar Bill? Dave Barry was kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A.